support from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods, holding a Welcome Back food tasting for returning students, faculty, and residents on Saturday, August 28th. Featured will be more than 100 international food items, including cheeses, olives, breads, chocolates, and more. World Harvest Foods at the intersection of 6th and University Avenue, Champaign. Programs on WILL are made possible with support from Sinfonia de Camera. Season tickets are now available for the 2004-2005 season. This season's performances feature the Beaux-Arts Trio's Golden Anniversary, String Serenade with the Pacifica Quartet, American Classics with Rudolf Hocken, and David Harris' Much Ado About Mozart, and an Evening of Romance featuring pianist Ian Hobson. For information about season tickets, call 333-6280. Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Lincoln Square Mall, a member of the Urbana Business Association, sponsoring the 29th Annual Urbana Sweet Corn Festival, August 27th and 28th in downtown Urbana. Along with Sweet Corn for All, there's entertainment, a car show, a dog show, an art show, and a children's area with a petting zoo.
Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. This morning, we will return again to the topic of same-sex marriage. It's an issue that's now being debated many places across the country. We thought that it would be a good thing to have some discussion on and decided that we would do two programs because there are definitely two very different sets of views on the issue. Yesterday morning, in this same hour of the show, the 10 o'clock hour, we had a panel of guests making the case for same-sex marriage. Gave you the opportunity to hear them, ask questions, agree, disagree, whatever you like. We're doing the same thing this morning. We have two guests that will make the arguments against same-sex marriage. And again, there's the opportunity to hear what they have to say and also to make comments and ask questions. Let me introduce to you our guests. Peter LaBarbera is executive director of the Illinois Family Institute. It's based in Glen Ellyn, Illinois. Before coming here to Illinois, he worked in Washington. He worked at the Family Research Council, serving as a policy analyst on homosexuality and gender issues. He also edited the council's weekly publication, Culture Facts. He also held similar positions at the Culture and Family Institute of Concerned Women for America, also based in Washington, D.C. He has also been a journalist. He was a reporter for the Washington Times, and he started out his career with Accuracy in Media, Reed Irvine's organization, and is contributing editor at the conservative national weekly Human Events. Kathy Valente founded Citizens for Community Values of Illinois back in 1994 to organize against a strip bar that opened in her town. She also serves Concerned Women for America as a home team captain and is on the Illinois State Steering Committee of CWA Virtue and as the CWA Virtue and Decency Coordinator. She's concerned with a number of issues, pornography being one of them. She's currently involved in a legislative effort to require schools in Illinois to filter sexually explicit material from children and also protect them from online sexual predators. As we talk, questions are certainly welcome. All we ask of people who call into the program is that you try to be brief in your comments, and we ask that so that we can keep the program moving along and get in as many different people as possible. But, of course, anyone is welcome to call. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, and that is good anywhere that you can hear us, around Illinois, Indiana, and that number is 800-222-9455. So 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Peter LaBarbera, hello.
Hello.
Thanks for talking with us today.
Thank you, David.
And Kathy Valente, thank you. And I must apologize to you because I have been saying your name wrong, and not just a little wrong, but very wrong, and totally my fault. Every piece of paper I have here says Valente quite clearly, and somehow my eyes looked at that and my brain saw Valentine. So I'm very sorry to have misidentified you now a number of times.
That's okay, David. I'm very embarrassed that apparently I sent you a bio that was not updated. I'm currently serving as the state director for Concerned Women for America of Illinois, and I'm really embarrassed that you got a bio that was from probably 3 or 4 years ago.
Well, again, we probably do have something that's more current. I think that one, the one that I was just looking at, came off of a website that where this was for a talk that you gave. You were at a conference back in 2000. So I, my apologies to it. Sometimes when you do these things, you get so many pieces of paper.
Sure.
You don't. It's hard to know. All right. You are now Illinois State.
I was going to accept full responsibility.
Okay. No. I don't think that's your fault either. Illinois State Director for Concerned Women for America.
That's correct.
All right. Well, having now gotten through all of that. I guess what I thought I would ask you to do just to start is to give me your sort of your main points of concern when it comes to same-sex marriage, and then we might want to go back and talk about some of those things in some detail. But if I simply start out asking the question, you obviously feel that it's not a good thing that we should not have same-sex marriage. So the question is why. And either of you can start.
Okay, I wouldn't mind starting.
Okay.
You really can't, David, discuss same-sex marriage without also discussing homosexuality, and I want to bring that to the forefront right now. And homosexuality is behavior, and it's a destructive and deadly behavior. And it's my very strong opinion, and a lot of people do agree with me, that the government has no business condoning behavior, approving of behavior that's hurting people. And I'll leave it at that. We'll get into more detail in a few minutes.
Okay. Mr. LaBarbera, you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, David, I just, the whole issue, of course, it's linked to the normalization of homosexuality on a number of fronts, but I think it's really gained a lot of, this whole debate has steamrolled, and I believe it's steamrolling in the favor of our position, because there are a lot of issues at play. One is the contention by the homosexual side, or I should say the liberal side on this issue, that this is a civil rights issue. That has really ignited the fire of a lot of African Americans who are outraged that a behavior, and not just a behavior, the equating of marriage between two men as the time-honored tradition of what marriage is between a man and a woman, saying that that is a civil rights issue. I think that has alienated a lot of people. We're very concerned at the implications of normalizing or putting government sanction behind a marriage, a so-called, which isn't really a marriage, and it will have far-reaching effects. For example, in schools, if gay marriage becomes the law of the land, you will have children being taught that they could not be taught that marriage is between a man and a woman, because marriage will expand, and that will have ramifications. You will have homosexual adoptions will increase. And most people, whether they're religious or not, David, believe that children do best if they have a mom and a dad. That's the ideal that we believe government should get behind. And we don't think it's right to create situations in which children are intentionally put in households that are motherless or fatherless by design. And yet, if you have a gay marriage regime in America or in the state of Illinois, the law will be behind this idea of an artificial equality behind equating traditional marriage and family, a mom and a dad, as it's always been, with the idea of, you know, say, two gay dads. Most people think that's wrong. And then I think the last point is, where I think the homosexual side is extremely disingenuous, is the slippery slope argument. They base their argument on the fact that that this is love, and, you know, what right does government have to so-called discriminate against people who are simply loving each other? Well, if you use the argument of love, consensual love, there are all sorts of arrangements that also claim consensual love. There's a polyamory movement which says that people should be able to have multiple partner unions. Why shouldn't the government get behind that love? And so the question is, where do you stop? And I think what we're saying is the boundaries that are honored by time and history and religion are you have marriage as between one man and one woman. And once you get beyond that, it's really moral and legal chaos.
All right. I have a caller who called in right here at the beginning, and rather than make them hold while we talk about some more of these things, why don't we get to them, and then I'm sure we'll get back to some of these issues again. And someone who's calling on a cell phone, so I want to get right to them, and it's on our toll-free line, line 4.
Thank you.
Yes.
Heard something an idea that the intelligence or how to go with your guests that we get the government out of marriage, the government and just the civil thing with civilians and churches and so when it's religion I think become married. So anyway, you ever get civil and all around you call it your church.
Thanks.
Problem, Nick, because business functioning relation hold them up. If you're supporting government the force of government behind these unnatural relationships, and you have the same set of problems. I think it's a convenient out for people who don't want to deal with this question of what government should get behind. Should government give special, or I should say, privileged status, as it were, to real marriages between a man and a woman and family, and encourage that, because we believe that's the foundation of a healthy society, versus some other form where government takes a neutral stand. And I think if you do take a neutral stand, you end up devaluing marriage, and this is what we're seeing in the Scandinavian countries, David, where marriage has been significantly devalued, and it's become much less of an important thing in society, and what we see is more children and more children raised in marriageless households, or living arrangements that are just far from the ideal.
You talked exclusively about children, but what about health benefits and job benefits, death benefits, property, things like that, that two people who are the same sex want to be able to have the same legal entities that men and women can have now in a marriage?
A lot of the things that you just listed are legally available without going into a counterfeit marriage or a civil union, or call it whatever you want. And to add to the fact that it would, civil unions or whatever you call them, they're still destructive. They're still a counterfeit marriage. It'll still increase confusion in our society on this issue. And something that Peter said earlier, that this will be taught to kids as being normal. If you've got churches just performing marriages, and then you've got the government sanctioning or licensing civil unions, or call it whatever you want, it's still a counterfeit marriage. It's still attempting to try to take on the characteristics of marriage, and it's never going to do that. And it'll be taught to our kids in school, as Pete said, but even furthermore, there'll be more kids experimenting with homosexuality and bisexuality. And I have a couple of friends that teach in the inner city of Chicago who have told me that in the junior high, as young as junior high kids now, they're experimenting with bisexuality, and it's chic. It's actually the fad. It's acceptable, and they're proud of themselves.
So it sounds like to me that you don't believe that homosexuality is innate. It's something that someone chooses or learns or can adopt, as opposed to something that is perhaps genetic or they're totally predisposed to.
Absolutely no research to date that proves that homosexuals are born that way. And I want to be very careful when
the other way.
Pardon me?
Or any research to prove that they're not.
Well, there is a lot of evidence of people who've changed the behavior.
Absolutely.
And that comes to our point that it's about behavior that can be changed.
Right.
We're having a banquet in late September, September 27th, featuring Stephen Bennett. His website is SB Ministries, by the way, if you want some evidence. But Stephen is just one man who lived 11 years as a homosexual. Now he's married to a woman with children. I mean, this is the reason why we're seeing African Americans so upset, because, say what you will, but there's no such thing as an ex-black or an ex-Hispanic, but there are many, many hundreds, even thousands, of former homosexuals, and that points to one reason why this is not a mere civil rights issue. It's about validating behavior and putting government validation behind a behavior which is harmful to the individual and not the equivalent of marriage, to be sure.
So there you go. It's a question of what you believe people should be and the way they should behave, and not really a question of marriage.
I'd like to talk a little bit more about the homosexuals are born that way argument, because Dr. Spitzer, who is with Columbia University, he was instrumental back in the 60s and 70s in having homosexuality removed as a mental disorder from the APA's list. And he, let me tell you, he's not a Christian. He's not even a conservative. In fact, I believe he considers himself an atheist. But he now contends that homosexuals can change as a result of reparative therapy. He has interviewed more than 200 former homosexuals himself. This really intrigued him. And that's something that we need to look at the research. There was another researcher from University of Utah. Her name is Dr. Lisa Diamond. And she studied a group of females between the ages of 16 and 23 who claimed they labeled themselves as lesbian. Over the course of the study, almost two-thirds had changed their label. over the course of this short study. Another Columbia University study, two professors examined the most prominent gay gene brain studies, the most prominent, and they concluded that, and these people are unbiased, they concluded there is no evidence at present, and I'm quoting, no evidence at present to substantiate a biological theory. Then you've got the infamous hypothalamus gland study, Dr. Simon LaVey, who himself is a homosexual. And here is a quote from him. He cautioned people when they looked at his study. He cautioned them and said, quote, I did not prove that homosexuality is genetic or find a genetic cause for being gay. I didn't show that gay men are born that way, the most common mistake people make in interpreting my work. And lastly, there was a study. Actually, there were several studies, but here's one. It's Dr. Hamer, who was trying to find if there was a connection between homosexuality and the X chromosome. And this is where I see connection. He said that homosexuality is not purely genetic. Environmental factors play a role. There is not a single master gene that makes people gay. And what I started to say before is I'm very careful in saying that homosexuals choose this behavior. I think that is the case in some cases, but I don't know that that is the case in all cases. But I truly believe that environment and the way they're raised as from early on, from birth on, plays a major role in them taking that path. I firmly believe that.
I want to come in here, and I hope the caller will forgive me because I want to get onto some other folks, and I want to thank him for his questions. I want also to introduce again our guest for this part of Focus 580. The last person you heard speak, that is Kathy Valente. She serves the organization Concerned Women for America as the Illinois State Director. She also founded back in 1994 an organization called Citizens for Community Values of Illinois and was particularly interested in things like the regulation of adult businesses, and also has been continues to be interested in the issue of computers and children's access to pornography on the internet, and wanted to make sure that schools and libraries, she feels that schools and libraries should have filters on their computers so that at least the kids cannot access pornography that way. Peter LaBarbera is executive director of the Illinois Family Institute based in Glen Ellyn, Illinois, and we're talking this morning about the issue of same-sex marriage. This is the second of two programs we've done this week. We had one yesterday in this same segment of Focus 580 with a panel who were advocating for same-sex marriage, and this is the other side, your opportunity to hear from both and ask questions of both. I have a caller I want to get to, but I want to get to one. You've raised so many points, many things that would be worth an entire hour of discussion just on their own. But let me ask, Kathy Valente, a couple of times in talking about the idea of same-sex marriage, you use the phrase that if we did that, what we have here is a counterfeit marriage. Mm-hmm. Having heard from some people who believe that there should be same-sex marriage, mm-hmm. it sounds from what they're saying is that they certainly don't think that that's what they would have, that they're interested in taking on all the rights and responsibilities of marriage, including the possibility of having children. And I guess I'd like to hear you talk about what constitutes a real marriage as opposed to a counterfeit marriage, because I would imagine that there are a number of people who, in making the case for same-sex marriage, would say, where exactly is the difference?
Well, David, I mean, what constitutes a real marriage? I mean, we can look to the institution of marriage as being instituted by God. And for thousands of years, society and culture and Judeo-Christian, groups have recognized marriage as being between one man and one woman only. And when I say a counterfeit marriage, you know, I want to just kind of draw a little bit of a parallel here between our government and our economy, and why they take such great steps to make sure that there is no counterfeit money out there. What's the big deal? People, you know, why shouldn't people be able to make a little extra cash in their basement? But it devalues the real thing. And so we have the same situation here. When you try to redefine marriage as being something other than one man and one woman, it I call it a counterfeit, but the problem lies in the fact that it devalues marriage. And Pete and I both brought up one of the problems or one of the consequences, and that would be our children, our future generations. And they would be taught that this this redefinition is normal. It's okay. It's being sanctioned. Our government says it's okay. And they would further experiment. And we would see chaos because we've seen it in the Scandinavian countries for over 10 years where they've allowed same-sex marriage. Marriage is now a thing of the past. Any form of family unit is now accepted in these countries. And marriage has declined to the point where they don't even keep divorce statistics anymore. They call it family dissolution because, after all, you have to be married to get divorced. And children are being born out of wedlock. It's not a healthy environment. And as Pete even mentioned, I totally agree with him. A good, stable foundation for our entire society is a family, is
David,
a marriage.
Could I say something, too?
Yeah, sure.
I think it's incumbent upon the other side to take the reverse of your questions and explain why this is marriage.
Good point.
It seems to me that even you could almost argue that the polygamists of the past had a greater claim to say that theirs was marriage than the homosexuals. If you look at history, I mean, homosexuality itself organized and the sort of proud affirmation of homosexuality is a relatively new concept in history, although there was homosexual behaviors, you know, for the longest time. But, I mean, marriage just is, and this is what most people in our society agree to, and we certainly believe that if marriage is going to be redefined, it can't be redefined, but politically speaking, it should not be done through unelected courts. And I believe that's the main reason why you're seeing such energy on the conservative social side, and they're not all religious, by the way, David, of course, as you know. Many people who are irreligious still want to defend marriage as it's always been. But it seems to me that the other side, the burden is upon them as to why we should allow such a vital institution, which has stood the test of time, to be redefined by narrow court majorities like we saw in Massachusetts. And that's why people want to have it put before them. In Missouri, the pro-family side was outspent, I think, over 20 to 1, David. It was incredible. They spent, I think, around $20,000. Their opponents spent well over, I believe it was hundreds of thousands of dollars. But yet the people of Missouri voted to protect marriages between one man and one woman by, Kathy, was at 71%. In favor of marriage. And so the other side is trying to pawn this off as a civil rights issue and say, they've even said, you can't, we shouldn't be able to vote on somebody's civil rights, which is, to me, an incredibly arrogant argument to say, we can't even put this to a vote. And in places like Michigan, the homosexual activists and their allies are working overtime to try to keep these issues off the ballot. What we're saying is, let the people vote. We had a chance. We would have loved to have a vote on the marriage question in Illinois. We pushed a state constitutional amendment, but Mike Madigan, the House Speaker, just stopped it in its tracks. We believe the people of the United States and Illinois should have the right to reaffirm marriages between one man and one woman.
Well, I have several callers here waiting, and we'll see. They may indeed want to take exception to some of your points, and that's fine. The only thing we ask is that the people try to be respectful. We can have some dialogue and also help us move things along because we already have three people holding, and I want to try getting as many people as possible. So with that, we'll go to Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I'm rather curious about you citing the Scandinavian countries as a deplorable example. Here we have a society with less violence, lower crime rates, higher student achievement. Perhaps this is an argument for abolishing marriage.
Well, I think that's a very political statement. There's clearly a problem. If I could, they've just been the press has reported. Well, actually, a lot of the press has not reported, but five scholars in the Netherlands issued a letter to people debating the issue of marriage. And here's one thing they said:
the Netherlands are not Scandinavia.
Well, the same argument is applied to the Netherlands. And we do see in these countries a devaluation of marriage. And, you know, the question is, I guess for
you... These countries are no longer Christian.
Well, regardless of whether they're Christian or not...
But they do have...
Should the people of the United States have a right to affirm marriage in their country? That's the question I have for you.
Well, what is marriage? If you go back to classical times, you find polygamy as common as
Yes, and we made a condition for Utah getting into the United States that they would have to disavow polygamy.
Oh, I agree with that, but...
I mean, there's a historical record in the United States of affirming marriage as between one man and one woman, and I'm asking you, do the people have a right to do that through the law?
Well, that's perhaps questionable, but the point is...
How could you say they don't?
But the question you've raised is that from time immemorial... marriage has been between one man and one woman, and quite distinctly, one can see that that has not always been the case. So I think we have a problem in the definition of marriage.
Right. But I did say that the polygamists would have a greater claim to have their marriages so-called recognized than the homosexuals. And I do believe the people of a country, especially a democracy where there's freedom in the United States, have the right to set their public policy. And I believe that the arrogance of the gay rights movement is to say that somehow this is a question for unelected judges, for judges to decide by 4-3 rulings. And then to make it worse, they're saying that the law that was passed and signed by Bill Clinton in 1996, the Defense of Marriage Act, Bill Clinton signed it, they are now working overtime to have that declared unconstitutional. Now, DOMA would say that a marriage, and for example, in Massachusetts, the so-called gay marriages there would not be forced to be recognized in other states. And so my point is we can have these philosophical discussions, but ultimately the most important one is, do the people of our country have the right to decide their own public policy, or will it be foisted on them by politically correct judges?
May I point out that one of the reasons for an independent judicial branch is to protect minorities from the majority?
Well,
you have an answer for that?
I believe that the purpose of the legislative branch is to set public policy, and it is not that the judicial branch is not to set public policy.
They didn't. They interpreted the law and found it lacking.
And if you're concerned about protecting minorities, what about the point of the other minorities who also lay a claim to marriage? And where does it stop? What about people?
And who are we considering a minority here? Homosexuals in general? They don't meet any of the standards for minority class status, according to the Supreme Court standards.
Well, I don't quite understand what your argument is there, but anyway.
Well, the argument there is that you have... The Supreme Court has recognized several criteria for protected class status for minorities, and one of them is a changeable. It's not changeable behavior. Homosexuality is changeable behavior. There are people who go into homosexual behavior.
Well,
there are people like Steve Bennett who go out.
There are bisexuals and there are homosexuals.
Well, that's your definition. But if I take it at face value that somebody says he's gay, why shouldn't we take it at face value when somebody says I used to be gay?
Have you ever thought of revising the Bible? You seem to...
No, we like it just the way God wrote it.
Well, there's a problem, too, of course. You're talking about a society and multiple religions, some of which don't believe that God wrote the Bible, even some Christians.
But again, the people, whatever
so
their belief system, have a right to defend marriage. I mean, I know a lot of irreligious people who are insulted at the idea that it's only religious conservatives who are defending marriage as one man, one woman. I have a friend named John Bivers who is not particularly religious, but he happens to believe that marriage is what it always has been. It's between men and women, a man and a woman. So, all these questions aside, it's not the place of the Supreme Court to decide for the law of the land if gay marriage is a basic right. That is legislating. That is creating a legal revolution through the courts. And I believe people are sensitive. They saw what happened in the past with abortion nationalized through the courts. They're very sensitive to the idea that the courts may do it again with so-called gay marriage. And so they're taking action, and they're supporting efforts to protect marriage, the definition of marriage, through the legislative process, and if necessary, constitutional amendments at the state level and a federal constitutional amendment.
I'd like to get back to the original question of the caller, where he compared the Scandinavian countries. We're saying that same-sex marriage has done a bad thing there, and he's saying that the academics have increased. And I think that's comparing apples and oranges. I'd like to ask the caller, how can you point to the fact that they've allowed same-sex marriage and connect that to the fact that they're achieving academically?
Well, so I'm sure that someone would ask you the same question. They would say there could be all sorts of reasons for things like increased divorce rate, the fact that people choose not to marry, the fact that there's out-of-wedlock birth, that you also can't make the same connection that you make between that and the fact that that society might allow same-sex marriage. I mean, there are all kinds of things that may happen
I wanted to say exactly that. I don't believe you can just say gay marriage caused these crises. In fact, the letter I was going to read about from the Dutch scholars said I'll just read directly from it. It says, there is as yet no definitive scientific evidence to suggest the long campaign for the legalization of same-sex marriage contributed to these harmful trends. However, there are good reasons to believe the decline in Dutch marriage may be connected to the successful public campaign for the opening of marriage to same-sex couples in the Netherlands. In other words, the idea of separating marriage from procreation and family and children in the long run has a deleterious effect. And that's what's happened. And we believe that if it's pushed in the United States, once you expand family and you have all sorts of alternative definitions and marriage, of course there's no stopping. Because if you're going to go by a rights model and love relationships, well, then my goodness, you know, there are other love relationships which also want to be validated. There are already existing, there are multiple partner unions. And I've never heard this addressed in a fair way by gay activists when you say, what about the rights of multiple partner unions that have a committed love to each other? What about their rights? It seems to me that gay activists are quite willing to discriminate against multiple partner unions as they make their crusade for gay marriage. But, of course, when you take the boundaries of a man and a woman away, it opens the floodgates.
All right. Well, let's go on to another caller. This will be line number two in Urbana. Hello.
Yes, good morning. I wanted to ask your speakers if they're opposed to any kind of homosexual unit at all. That's my first question. I have a follow-up.
I can address that. Yes, I am opposed to it, and I can give some evidence as to why it's bad. We care an awful lot about homosexual people, and we care very much about the fact that they're hurting themselves. They're dying.
So you're not just against the marriage. You're actually opposed to any type of homosexual union. Is that
correct?
Yes.
I work alongside of former lesbians and former homosexuals, and they are firsthand, they'll tell you how destructive that lifestyle is. And let me just give you
about heterosexual destructive marriages?
Sure, there's destructive heterosexual behavior too. Absolutely, absolutely, positively. We're not just talking about one.
Yeah, and we're opposed to companies and government rewarding unmarried heterosexual unions as well.
And unhealthy behavior. You know, every year the Gay and Lesbian Medical Association puts out a list of serious health problems that they have found among those who engage in homosexual behavior. What they put out is for the benefit of homosexuals. They say homosexual men have a higher rate than the general population for hepatitis, which can lead to cirrhosis and liver cancer. They have a higher rate for prostate, colon, testicular cancers, and sexually transmitted diseases, including the anal papillomavirus, which they're finding plays an increased or has a role in the increased rate of anal cancers in gay men.
Yeah.
They have a higher rate for eating disorders, depression, which often leads to suicide, anxiety, alcohol, and substance abuse.
I've noticed you've
cited several. And interestingly enough, if you go to the Illinois Department of Public Health's website, you can clearly see that 60% of the AIDS cases in Illinois are from men who have sex with men, while still they make up a very small, very minute percent of the population of our 12.5 million percent of our population number.
Well, I'd like to comment on some of the scientific studies that you cited earlier, both you and the other gentleman. But there are certain scientific studies that suggest that those most strident in their tone against homosexuality are themselves maybe repressing homosexual tendencies. Would you care to comment?
Well, my
answer is no, I'm not.
Yeah.
Please, how about you?
I'm working overtime to do that repression. I've got 5 kids and a wife, so
yeah.
I mean, I think that's a
and
typical.
And I'm married and have 3 kids and a grandson, so no, I think we're that's not a, repressing anything.
It's a typical intimidation
that's
tactic
right.
to say that somehow
right.
you can't have a debate and oppose hold your viewpoint that opposes the gay activist side without having some sort of repressed anxiety about being homosexual. And
but
I think
you'd have to agree that there are several. Studies psychologically in nature, empirical in nature, that have been longitudinally tested with several groups of people over a long period of time that point exactly that, that many people who oppose homosexual marriage and are most strident in their tone are often trying
right.
to...
Well, I hope you haven't found our tone strident, and I have to see those
right.
studies.
Right.
I do know that a lot of the gay parenting studies we see come from gay activists, academics with an agenda, and now some of the veneer is coming off these studies, and they're being challenged in the courts, and that's good, because I do believe we can have a civic debate, though. And I think that we need to get rid of the cheap shots. You know, some guys on the right, we've got the sort of the wackos on the right,
right.
the guy who goes around with the God hates fag sign at gay funerals of all places.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's ridiculous. And you have the guys on the left saying that, gosh, you know, those guys who oppose homosexuality, they're all secret homosexuals. I think we should dispense with this sort of name-calling and just get to the issues. And I think the main thing is, the most important thing for our society is that this question needs to be debated fairly. We have to stop having these homosexual activist groups trying everywhere to get these issues off the ballot, as they are in Michigan, as they attempted in Ohio. What are they afraid of? Are they afraid of a democratic discussion on the issue in which the people debate? What is Mike Madigan afraid of in Illinois? We had thousands of calls pouring into his office. Many people, it was a Democratic resolution, by the way. Bill Grunlow in Effingham, a Democratic legislator, put forth the amendment to define marriage in the Illinois Constitution as between one man and one woman. And when you looked at the gay newspapers in Chicago, they were afraid of that issue getting on the ballot. And we're saying, let's be open about it. Let's debate this. Let's not call each other names.
Right.
Let's talk about whether marriage should be defined and protected as it is, and let the people decide.
Well, can I just real quick, and then I have other callers. Already, the Illinois state law says that marriage is between one man and one woman.
Right.
Isn't that enough?
Well, David, it's not. That's the problem. We really feel that what we're afraid of is a Roe v. Wade on the homosexual marriage issue. As you remember, David, Roe v. Wade, the Supreme Court, basically nationalized abortion. And if you read the opinion, they said, hey, this is going to solve the abortion problem. You know, we're going to just take this off the, you know, it's going to make it less, we'll just settle this for the nation. We're afraid that there will be a federal decision which will mandate recognition of so-called gay marriage or civil unions across the land, which is why they want to take preemptive action. Our side wants to take preemptive action through a federal constitutional amendment, and why at the state level we want to enshrine it in our Constitution that marriage cannot be redefined. Now, let me say, already, David, there are efforts to force the taxpayers of Illinois to subsidize or recognize through the government these alternative relationships. We have the AFSCME union has just negotiated with the state health benefits for homosexual partners. We have several universities now funding partner benefits. And we believe the people of Illinois should make this decision whether they want to subsidize unnatural relationships or unmarried relationships, gay or straight, or whether they want to put government behind marriage as the basis for a stable society.
And I just want to briefly
yes.
add to the reason it's important that we amend our state constitution and at some point our federal constitution is the fact that laws can be struck down, David. We do have a law, Defense of Marriage Act, that was passed in 1996, but as we've seen in many court cases, some of these judges are striking down these laws.
I just want to remind people who are listening that we just have about 10 minutes left in the show. No, pardon me, 15 minutes left in the show, a little bit less. We have callers. We'll try to get as many as we can, but I would like to introduce again our guests. Kathy Valente serves as the Illinois State Director of Concerned Women for America. Peter LaBarbera, Executive Director of the Illinois Family Institute, based in Glen Ellen. We're talking about same-sex marriage. Yesterday, we had a panel of guests here in this first hour of the show making arguments for same-sex marriage, and on this program we have two guests who are making arguments against, and questions are welcome. We'll continue to try to get in as many callers as we can. Champaign is next, line three. Hello. It's very, sir, it's very difficult for us to hear you. You're quite faint.
I'd like to raise a few points. Can
yes.
you hear me better then?
Yes, I think so. Yes, go ahead.
First, regarding the one man, one woman as marriage, it's been raised before by a previous caller, but certainly in the Hebrew Bible, you've got a long tradition of polygamy. In cultures such as Islamic cultures, you have a long tradition of polygamy. African cultures have such a tradition. Asian cultures, China, certainly has a tradition which is at least 2,000 to 3,000 years old. So one man, one woman is a an image that reflects a certain period of time and a certain narrow cultural perspective, which is really, the United States is much more than that now. But I'd like to go to another direction and ask.
Could I comment on that really quick?
What?
Could I just comment on that really quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
It's the accepted norm in American public policy, and I believe we don't want to return to polygamy. I think polygamy demeans women. We like the standard here. It does rise out of our history, the Christian history mostly, Judeo-Christian history. And again, I would say that it's not a narrow viewpoint. It seems to be the accepted, the vastly majority accepted opinion in the United States, and it should not be altered through courts. If it's going to be altered at all, the people should have the say.
Okay. Maybe the caller, I think we've kind of exhausted that point. Maybe you have another point you want to go on to?
I just wondered if it's possible to just separate the legal sanction of marriage as a something that the government does or doesn't sanction based on whatever criteria the government has, and at the same time allow religious sanction of marriage in ways that any specific tradition wishes. And the fact that you seem to be wanting to mix those two and to reinforce those two seems to be really mixing this establishment of religion in a form which I don't know if it's good for the nation, nor I don't do I know whether it's something that constitutionally is.
Yeah. An earlier caller really raised the very same question, and I again maybe I don't know either Peter or Kathy, you want to address that.
I think we've dealt with this. It's public policy. It's not just religion. And if you're going to have that, then what is to stop all other forms of relationships, including polygamy, from also demanding this civic recognition? It's not just a religious issue here. Marriage has been public policy of the United States. Marriage as between one man and one woman, as evidenced by the attempt of Utah, the stipulation that Utah could not enter the union until it eradicated the polygamy in Utah. So I believe, you know, this is our long history, and it shouldn't be changed, especially by a narrow, small court ruling.
I want to thank the caller. Let's go to someone else. Chicago next. Let's go to line number one. Hello.
Yes, I was wondering if you could address the extra financial costs that would be involved in terms of higher taxes and insurance premiums by recognition of the same-sex unions. I understand there's quite a few benefit programs that would be available then, and also, insurance coverage. Has there been much study in this way?
I can bring up a couple of points here that may help in that regard. There's been a number of studies, and I can talk about two of them in particular. One is the University of Chicago study. In other words, a study last year published in the journal AIDS. And it states, these studies reveal that homosexuals, even in so-called steady relationships or monogamous relationships, have an average of 6 to 10 sex partners outside of their steady sex partner. And follow me here, I'm getting to the point I wanted to make. The research concluded that these people were more likely to have contracted HIV from their steady partner than from casual partners because of the outside sexual encounters. They are sexually charged relationships. Let's talk about AIDS. I made a point earlier that if you go to the Illinois Department of Public Health website, you can see that 60% of all the AIDS cases in Illinois are from men who have sex with men alone. And AIDS is very, very costly. So I can see if you've got HIV increases where same-sex marriage is actually allowed, if you've got multiple partners outside of monogamous relationships or so-called same-sex relationships or civil unions, call them what you want, and you have an increase in AIDS, it's going to be a burden on the taxpayers in the long run. There is no doubt about it.
Okay, thank you.
All right, let's go to Urbana, line two. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, one of the big issues seems to be this idea that there's a small number of people on the court who somehow set public policy and be legislative. I guess my understanding of the court is that it doesn't set public policy, but it determines if public policy passed by the majority meets constitutional muster. And the issue here is protecting the rights of minorities, as someone mentioned earlier. You know, if we would have referendum on interracial marriages 40 years ago, I'm sure it would have lost.
But if I could comment on that, in Massachusetts, there was no public policy that was being struck down. It was just the institution of marriage. The court took upon itself the idea of
a law was unconstitutional, and you don't have to interrupt me.
Saying that
other people talk.
Well, wait. Okay. If one thing is for sure, if we have two people talking at once, we can't understand either of you. So I'll tell you what. Hold on, Mr. LaBarbera. We'll give you a chance to respond, but I want to give the caller also a chance to have his say. Go ahead, caller.
Yeah, I mean, I think really it is about protecting minority rights. There's a lot of public policies, a lot of laws that are passed that are struck down as unconstitutional. That's what the courts are for. You can't just embrace one arm of the government that you like. It comes with three arms. There's the president, there's the executive branch, there's the courts, and there's the legislative branches. Your focus on one thing that supports your point of view underscores that, yes, there is widespread concern, and maybe even a majority disagree with this, but that isn't how we run our government. We don't always let the majority dominate other people's interests. Thank you.
All right. Mr. LaBarbera, you want to pick up on that?
I would say that people now feel that this minority, this judicial activist minority, is running the country. They're setting policy. And it's a huge leap to say that something calling marriage between two people is all of a sudden a constitutional right. And as the caller mentioned, again, I bring up, he talks about protected minorities. What about other minorities that want marriage? What about marriage between a man and his sister? What about multiple partner unions? I mean, the court has taken a radical stand. One of the justices in Massachusetts, who, in fact, the justice, I believe her name was Marshall, who wrote the opinion, a couple years before, appeared at a gay activist event and at a fundraiser. I mean, there was a conflict of interest there, and there's a sense that the judges are overstepping their bounds. They are revolutionizing society, usually in a politically correct way, and that's why you're seeing people want to reclaim their government. And this federal marriage amendment, I believe this will be an ongoing issue for years, David, because there is a sense that we have to take it upon ourselves to protect marriage, because if we let it go, one day the Supreme Court will to say that marriage is a constitutional right, gay marriage.
And, I'd like to commend the caller in his knowledge of how the different branches of government are supposed to work. There is checks and balances. However, he did say that the judicial branch is supposed to rule on law based on our Constitution. The problem is that's not happening. Pete just said there are judicial activist judges that are literally making laws, and we're finding that out, which is why there's legislation, current federal legislation, that would once again remind these federal judges and establish it in law again that they are limited in what they can and cannot do. They are only supposed to rule on laws that have been established by the lawmakers based on our Constitution. And so there is a problem in that area, but I do commend the caller for his knowledge in that.
I want to try to get at least one more caller here, Bloomington, Indiana, line number four. Hello.
Hi. Isn't it true that because of demands for a same-sex marriage, several court cases have been filed demanding recognition of polygamous marriages?
I think there was something in Utah, and of course that's what we're going to see. It's a slippery slope, definitely, and there's no way. I've never heard this satisfactorily answered of what about the love, the consensual love of other relationships? What about that love? Shouldn't that love be protected, especially if we're talking about protecting minorities?
And, you know, there is a case in Canada, and you can laugh at this, you can call it ridiculous, you can say what you want, but it's a legitimate case. There's a man in Canada who is demanding the right to be able to marry his dog because, in fact, he loves his dog, and he wants to be considered a couple. I mean, I know that sounds silly and foolish, but it's happening. So where do we draw the line? We talked about the slippery slope. Where do we stop?
May I ask you also to comment quickly on something that Maggie Gallagher said? You probably know who Maggie Gallagher is.
Yes.
She's a marriage expert. And she responded to the claim that children raised in homosexual homes do as well as children raised in heterosexual homes. Maggie Gallagher says that this claim that children raised in homosexual homes do just as well, she says that's only true if the heterosexual family is unstable or broken. In other words, children raised in a homosexual home do as well as children raised in a broken
yes.
heterosexual home.
Yes. In fact, that was one of the studies, one of the ways, I can't remember, her first name is Patricia, but a scholar at the University of Virginia, and one of the, I think it's kind of a trick that she used, was she compared single-parent homes to homosexual coupled households. The raising of children. But there were two scholars at the University of Southern California, I think, Kathy, that's the one, where they did look at, they did a meta-analysis of homosexual children raised in homosexual households, and they found that there was a difference. Now, these are two pro-gay researchers who found that there was a difference and that children in homosexual households were more likely to experiment with homosexual behavior, more likely to identify themselves as gay and bisexual than children raised in heterosexual homes.
We are at the point we're going to have to stop, and I have one more caller. I'm sorry, we just can't take them because we've exhausted the time. We want to say thanks to the guests. Peter LaBarbera, he's executive director of the Illinois Family Institute. That's based in Glen Ellyn, Illinois. And also Kathy Valente. She is Illinois State Director for Concerned Women for America. And I know that both of you, your organizations have websites. If people have internet access, I'm sure that they can go and find out more about both organizations. Probably the easiest way would simply be to type the organization's name in their web browser, and I'm sure they can find the Illinois Family Institute and Concerned Women for America that way.
Yes, IllinoisFamily.org is ours, David.
Okay.
David, thank you so much. And this is a great, lively discussion, and we'd be thrilled to be invited back as guests again if in the near future.
All right. Well, we appreciate you giving us your time. Again, Kathy Valente and Peter LaBarbera.
Thanks, David.
Thank you both very much. Our program, Focus 580, made possible in part by Strawberry Fields on West Springfield Avenue in downtown Urbana. Strawberry Fields has an in-store nutritionist, provides a wide assortment of natural foods, vitamins, and supplements, as well as a full deli, coffee bar, bulk herbs, fresh breads, and produce. The broadcast is also made possible by a grant from Horeen's Pianos Plus, your Steinway piano showroom in Bloomington. Horeen's Pianos Plus offers new and pre-owned pianos by Steinway & Sons, Boston by Steinway, and other fine pianos. Coming up a little bit later today as part of the Afternoon Magazine, the program that follows this one, writer Philip Graham will be stopping by to talk about some of the poetry that he is enjoying this summer. He's a professor of English. He's also director of creative writing at University of Illinois here in Urbana-Champaign. Celeste Quinn is the host for the show, and Philip will be with her in the 1 o'clock hour. The Afternoon Magazine begins at noon with news from NPR, BBC, and AM 580. That's here on AM 580. In the next part of this program, we'll be talking a little bit about how people thought about electricity when it was a new thing. Linda Simon is our guest. She teaches at Skidmore College. She's written a new book that's titled Dark Light, in which she explores the fact that while at the time people were very enthusiastic about electricity as a medical treatment, they were very hesitant about having it in their homes to do things like light lights. More on that in the second part of the show. First, though, we're going to take a break for news and update on the market, so please stay tuned.
Agricultural information is made possible in part by a grant from the Archer Daniels Midland Company. ADM, the nature of what's to come.
Good morning, everyone.